Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur once again. We read something from his commentary on Sri Brahma Samhita. By the way, his commentary on Sri Brahma Samhita is just his rendering of Jiva Goswami's commentary on Sri Brahma Samhita. So I'm going to read some quotes from an essay on Brahmana and Vaishnava by Bhaktisiddhanta, where, just like, you know, a big overview is, he's saying the essence of what it is to be a Brahmana, you know, the conventional word today is spiritual, is honesty. He uses interchangeably with honesty simplicity as opposed to duplicity. So you're just straightforward. Duplicitous means, you know, you say one thing, do another thing. It's never straight. Your actions and your speech are not consistent. You deceive people with your words. You deceive people with your actions. Your heart is crooked. So simplicity and honesty are, he uses as the same, almost interchangeable. Here's his preamble about simplicity. The Mahabharata Vanaparva has established that simplicity is the only identification of a Brahmana. Therefore, we find that by the influence of this extraordinary quality of the ideals of simplicity, you can put self-honesty in place, are found in scriptures that are written by Brahmanas, meaning persons that aren't straightforward or value something else, and say that that's what a Brahmana is. Neutrality. We read about neutrality in Bhagavad Gita. Seeing equally pebbles, stones, and gold, or seeing equally honor and dishonor, seeing equally everything. So it's fixed in a spiritual self-conception, so neutral towards that which isn't who we are. Neutral towards the dream. You know, that in the dream you can be happy, in the dream you can be unhappy and remain neutral, or see something. A Brahman approves his simplicity by opening his heart and speaking the truth, even if it hampers his own self-interest. Wherever there's a lack of simplicity, one should know that there's no question of Brahminical culture. So, I'm going to read four quotes. He gives like 11 of them, and each of them are scriptural descriptions of self-honesty. O Brahman, if a person is born in a family of Shudra and possesses good qualities, he becomes a Vaishya or Kshatriya. And if he possesses the quality of simplicity, he is a Brahmana. Again, simplicity meaning opening your heart, speaking the truth, straightforward. Another Vanaparva Mahabharata quote. The Brahmana told the pious hunter, in my opinion, you are still a Brahmana. So there was this dialogue, a Brahmana speaking to a hunter. And yeah, he asked the hunter, what is your lineage? And he said, I am a hunter, I have none. But I see you as a Brahmana. Why? There's no doubt about it. After all, a Brahmana who is proud and engages in various sinful activities that result in his falling down into the degradation of being contaminated by impure karma is equal to a Shudra. And I consider a Shudra who is self-controlled, so these are qualities, self-controlled, truthful, and always enthusiastic about executing his religious duties to be a Brahmana. Indeed, the only criterion for being a Brahmana is to possess pure characteristics. So that's two Mahabharata quotes. The third is from the Chandogya Upanishad of the Samaveda. I'll just remark that amongst the Puffy Wuffy scholars, there are some of the Upanishads that are considered more important, some that are less important. This is just their, you know, their stuff. So Chandogya Upanishad is one that they really value as being authentic and so on. So in the Chandogya Upanishad, it speaks of the story of Gautama Rishi and Satyakama, the son of Jabala. So one day, Satyakama, son of Jabala, asked his mother, "I want to live as a brahmachari. Which dynasty do I belong to?" In answer, Jabala told Satyakama, "My son, I do not know the dynasty you belong to. In my youth, I served as a maidservant in various places, and at that time begot you as my son. Therefore, I don't know what gotra you belong to. My name is Jabala, and your name is Satyakama. Therefore, you should say that you are Satyakama Jabala." So he went to Gautama Rishi and said, "Gautama Rishi, I'd like to become your disciple and become a brahmachari in your ashram." And he said, "Very well. What is your gotra?" He said, "I don't know." It's told in two different ways. First he asked, then he says, "Go ask your mother," or he asked his mother, and then, "What's your gotra?" Said, "I don't know. My mother said she doesn't know who my father is." And so she just said to say, "My name is Satyakama. My mother's name is Jabala. So I'm Satyakama Jabala." So Gautama then said to him, "My dear son, no one other than a brahmana can speak such truth as you have spoken. Therefore you are a brahmana, and I accept you. Go bring wood for the sacrifice." Satyakama said, "I'm going right now to get wood for the sacrifice." And then Gautama said, "Never divert from the truth." So self-honesty is the standard of Brahminical culture. We've been reading in the Bhagavatam where when Brahminical culture is lost, then all other forms of culture also become deviated. It becomes the culture of no culture, where expressions of art and expressions of music and expressions of architecture and expressions of life become degraded. They become animal life when Brahminical culture is lost. So this item of simplicity or straightforwardness or honesty it emerges in the life of one who is trying to be a devotee. It's according to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the foremost quality to look to. Because without being honest, how are you going to get out of illusion? There's another one, it's rather long, but it's very nice. Bhaktisiddhanta introduces it in this way. He says, in the Mukti Upanishad, there's a list of 108 Upanishads. We sometimes are asked that question, why 108? So in case you're asked that, how come you have 108 beads? One answer you can give them is, in the Mukti Upanishad, it mentions there are 108 principal Upanishads. People go, "Oh, that's nice." Like, it's just an information question. It really doesn't matter to them. It's just curiosity. So there's an answer you can give them. The 108 principal Upanishads. Okay. Among which, number 38 in the list is the Vajra Suchi. Suchiko Upanishad. So here's the dialogue in Suchiko Upanishad, where there's a description of the four varnas, and then there's the question, well, of the four, what is the brahmana? Who is a brahmana? Is it the living entity, the body, the caste, the knowledge, the activities, or the religionist? Of these, which is the brahmana? It goes through. Is it this and defeats it? Is it that it defeats it? Is it that it defeats it? Is it, so it's just ruling out by process of elimination what it isn't. It's interesting arguments. It is proposed that the living entity is the Brahmana, but that is not correct. The living entity remains the same in past, present, and future, though he receives various types of bodies according to his karma. He, the soul, remains unchanged. Therefore, the living entity is not the Brahmana. Then, is the body the Brahmana? No, it is not. The bodies of human beings, down to the chandala, are all made of the same five gross elements. Therefore, birth and death, and religion and irreligion equally affect all bodies. And since there is no law that the Brahmanas are white, Kshatriyas are red, Vaishyas are yellow, and Shudras are black, the body is therefore not the Brahmana. Moreover, when the sun burns the son of a Brahmana burns the body is therefore not the Brahmana. Therefore, when the son of a Brahmana burns the body of his dead father, he does not commit the sin of killing a Brahmana. Therefore, the body is not the Brahmana. Well, then, is the caste the Brahmana? No, this is also not the case. Many great sages have been born of other living beings. Vrishyasringa was born from a deer. Kaushika was born from kusha grass. Jambuka Rishi was born from a jackal. Valmiki was born from an anthill. Vyasadeva was born from a fisherman's daughter, etc. Some of these are really amazing. Gotama was born from the back of a rabbit. I don't know the detail, don't ask me. Apart from these personalities, there are many other wise persons born from castes who became sages. Other castes who became sages. Therefore, caste is not the Brahmana. So then, is knowledge the Brahmana? No. Not that either. Because many persons, such as some Kshatriyas, were very learned and knew the absolute truth. Therefore, knowledge is not the Brahmana. Then activities, and go through argument. So, who's the Brahmana? The religious person. No, they're religious persons that are Brahmanas. Well, who's the Brahmana then? So it comes down to qualities. Anyone who knows the self as one, devoid of mundane caste qualities and activities, devoid of contamination, kamkrod, lobh, moha, mada, matsarja, and so on, the personification of transcendental knowledge and bliss beyond duality, the supersoul of all living, knowing the supersoul of all living entities, all pervading inside and outside like the vast sky, so on. Who lives always satisfied, devoid of faults like lust and anger, who possess qualities like peacefulness, self-control, devoid of envy, void of thirst for material attachment, illusion, and other faults. That's a high bar, huh? And it was untouched by pride, false ego, and so on. Such a person is a Brahmana. This is also the opinion of the Shruti, Smritis, Itihasas, Puranas, and other scriptures. Otherwise, one cannot be a real Brahmana. But then he gives seven other quotes and says, By all these evidences, it is clearly understood that one should be accepted without hesitation as Savitriya, or Daiksha, or initiated Brahmana, if he possesses simplicity, the nature of a Brahmana, regardless of his birth. So, we're being trained in Krishna consciousness to become devotees of Krishna, and in becoming devotees of Krishna to manifest Vaishnava qualities. One of those Vaishnava qualities is this quality of simplicity. What Bhaktisiddhanta is saying, and simplicity is a quality of goodness. Because only one who is in goodness can honestly state, like, you know, the little role play here, well, I'm not really doing so well with my chanting. And, you know, whatever is going on, to even it may expose one as not in a, you know, a laudable, venerable position, but the truth is the truth. And opening one's heart and speaking the truth, this is this simplicity or straightforwardness. And even if so, whatever the situation is, at least in appropriate circumstances, at least within ourselves, there should be self-honesty, what our actual situation is. And you've got this list of what a qualified person is, and it doesn't take much to say, well, we're not there yet. And that's a Brahmana before it's even a Vaishnava. So we're trying to be Vaishnavas. We're trying to receive mercy so that we can become qualified Vaishnavas. So a very good starting point, just like for Satyakama Jabala, a very good starting point is this truthfulness. We're trying to be Vaishnavas, to be truthful, and start with being truthful to oneself. Now, did you deal with, in your earlier session with, I forget the word that you used, obstacles for self-honesty, what was your word?
Barriers.
And then overcoming barriers, you dealt with that already? Fear of being judged was one of the barriers.
Neha has a comprehensive list of the barriers.
How big is the list? Ooh, okay. Okay. And then you went through the exercise of connecting with resources that will help you overcome barriers.
Good. They came to the conclusion that, like Prabhupada's one kikalpa, even if we have one resource, all these obstacles can be one lady's Sadhguru or somebody who's...
Okay. So just do a little refresh here. Each of us are in a different position in our lives, in our spiritual trajectory. That's natural. It's quite okay that we're in different position. One person, another person, that's perfectly fine, perfectly natural. But something that's common is we would like to make further spiritual progress in the course of our lives. Whatever other things that we may want to also accomplish, that's something that we share in common. The reason for picking this topic, self-honesty, I mean, going back to, you know, some of the opening remarks, but I found over a period of time that in my efforts to help another person make some progress on their trajectory of spiritual life, self-honesty is, say, positive, negative. Positive self-honesty is so important. Or if self-denial is there, if dishonesty or duplicity, what to speak of deceiving oneself, is there, it's progress is very difficult. It's practically negligible until the individual can become self-honest. So it must be there. And the other is in Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's writing. For some research purpose, I spent some time with that essay, Brahmana and Vaishnava, and it's so striking. It's like, you know, it jumps out of the chapter that this one quality is the outstanding quality to bring purity into one's life. You're using the term Brahmana, but purity, self-honesty, is the most outstanding quality to find. One can point to other ones. Humility is necessary, respect is necessary. But one can think that one is humble and being respectful and being self-deceiving. So I selected to speak on it because it's so important as a way to help all of you go further steps in your spiritual lives, along with all the other things that your lives are made up of. And I also was very moved that purport to text 61 from Sri Brahma Samhita is a common, the question is a common question that people ask. The how-to. How do I, you know, I get it over here with sadhana, but I don't get it over here with the other stuff. How to progress in spiritual life. So, the connecting the material side of life with this staying with this integrity position of self-honesty. And it connects also with a topic that I asked Krishna Smaran to speak about, this topic of competition. In all of your things with school and athletics and the whole way of material upbringing, life of material upbringing, so much is win-lose and competition. And, you know, you're handsomely rewarded if you win. And alternatively, you lose. So you want to win, because you don't want to lose. And that principle is not a principle of spiritual life. The principle of spiritual life is, if another person advances, then I also benefit, directly and indirectly. Indirectly, because if the goal is pleasing Krishna, another person pleases Krishna, the goal is reached. So if I assist another person to please Krishna, and Krishna is pleased, then everybody wins. And then I have another advanced devotee to associate with because he's now become advanced. So now I benefit too. It's a whole other way of life. Without envy. Without duplicity. It's the kind of life that those who are a little tuned in and a little sensitive find to be happiness, or when it's the opposite, it's unhappiness. We don't like it. We don't like it even when we win, because it's minus that it fosters enviousness. The person that lost becomes, you know, opposed. We have now some opposition. And so on. It's just there's no real taste to it. Not like the position of spiritual life. So those are some of the reasons for taking up this topic. And I hope that you feel a little bit more tuned into the what that importance is. and some of the ways to help you access that more in your life, self-honesty. Okay. You're, when it comes to questions, you're not like a really highly participatory group, but maybe it's because I'm intimidating or something. Any thoughts or something that you'd like to share, something that you learned or appreciated or something like that? Yes?
Thank you very much, Maharaj, for spending so much time with us for this weekend. And actually, we were preparing something for Vyasa this, so I was noticing how much time you spent over the whole year for us. Over the course of this weekend, I noticed, coming up with barriers and everything, and what helps us with barriers. So, I just noticed that all you have to do is look for that in your life. Turn around and look at all the support that's there for you. And then all the barriers look so simple to get over. So I'm hoping I can get over them.
It's a response to that. If you... Your jaw would hit the floor if you had an idea of throughout all of this weekend that all I've been doing and what you haven't seen what I've been doing is another whole wave of stuff. Jankadananda got a little taste of it this morning. My life is getting busier and busier and too much busy. But I don't want to stop. It's just like GBC level responsibilities. But I don't want to stop this investing in your lives. The commitment is to all of you. I can't uncommit so I can do those other things. I'll try to do those other things as best as I can, but I'm not going to uncommit to all of you. And that's part of, as you heard from Krishnasmarana's rendering of pure association, that's necessary. The persons who are have Krishna conscious experience and a little bit of maturity need to commit to others. And when that commitment to others takes place, then it's possible to evoke commitment from seeing, here's a resource, here's someone that really cares, is really committed, let me try. Because I'm sure you have had experience of trying to help somebody who doesn't want to get helped. They're complacent, they want to stay stuck. They're stuck and they want to stay stuck. So what do you do? And it's these two things. It's your own, how you have personally imbibed those principles, how you received and how much you've received will also resonate with giving and, making the personal commitment yourself to go another step and then committing to another person to help them go another step. It's just, that's how our progress in Krishna consciousness, or even just say Krishna consciousness, boils down to relationships. Ultimately, it's our relationship with Krishna. And then there's so many other relationships surrounding that relationship with Krishna. When we commit to our relationship with Krishna, then we can commit to our relationships with others who are in relationship with Krishna. And everything flourishes. But then, like a branch, break the branch, looks like a branch, but it starts to wither. Everything dries up. and how to reconnect the branch. It's not easy. Resources are there, and commitment is required to take the resources and work with them. And then the magic starts to happen. Anything else?
Yeah. I also want to sort of second what Shruti said in my opening comments with the devotees. I was thanking you that somehow I was engaged in the service, so it helped me go deeper into this aspect of my life, self-honesty, and how it also gave me a chance to reflect on all the devotees that I have in my life that are, you know, allowing me to move on that path. And I also appreciated them, that it's because of their sincerity that you are giving so much time, so through their sincerity, I'm also benefiting. And one thing that I wanted to share with them, as Maharaj was mentioning earlier, so we are all at different places in our spiritual life. So I feel that, I want to tell all of you to be tender to yourself. You are still very young, in a way you have not really seen life yet. But you have already a great head start. So I'm very, very happy that you have all of this at such a young age already. I want to appreciate that. Thank you.
And the younger devotees, whether you acknowledge it or not, the younger devotees look to whatever you all are doing as role models or, to be followed, good or bad, or mixed. That's their responsibility. It just, from the years of Krishna Conscious Association that you have had, to be that model for the younger kids. And some of the younger kids share that with me. So, they feel encouraged that you're giving some attention to them. It's important.
I'm taking from them.
Huh?
So I'm taking from mistress. I've noticed that in Krishna consciousness, giving and taking happens simultaneously. Yeah.
Okay. Lunch prasadam. Ready to go. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Srila Prabhupada Maharaj ki jai.